This is University Forum. I'm Jean Moore, bringing you conversations with outstanding personalities on issues of interest to local, national, and international communities. Our topic today is part two of the artistic and creative life of Jack Waters and Peter Kramer. We continue our conversation with these life partners, Jack Waters and Peter Kramer, and I want to welcome them back to the microphones by telephone to New York. Jack Waters, welcome back to University.
Hi there. How are you doing?
And Peter?
Good afternoon, Jean.
Thanks for having both of you back on the show.
Our pleasure.
And I'm so pleased that we can start this week and pick up on some of the things that we were just beginning to touch on in our last show. One of the things that we ended on had to do with a discussion on AIDS. Let's give a definition for our listeners as to what actually is AIDS and what is HIV. Can you define that?
Well, it's kind of complicated because neither of us, of course, are physicians, but because we both have come up through the AIDS activist movement from a time when a lot of the treatment and care provision came directly from community response, I can answer a little bit. AIDS is acquired immune deficiency syndrome. So it is not in and of itself a disease, but it is a syndrome which causes the immune system to break down and allows the body to be vulnerable to disease. One of the most known causes for AIDS is HIV, a virus that affects the immune system. So there are many theories, and unfortunately, a lot of the leading AIDS activists believe that there is not nearly enough research to go into discovering fully what causes AIDS. But it's pretty well understood that HIV is one of the main, if not the leading, component that causes AIDS.
The condition has existed now, at least the knowledge of it, for quite some time. What is it, good 20, 25, 30 years now?
Yeah, it's marked from 1981,
I believe.
81 is, I believe,
the first discovery. I think it might be.
Yeah, that's about the right, about that time frame. And initially we know that a great deal of the reaction was placed on the gay community. What was it like? Talk about that.
Well, yeah, it was originally discovered in the West, in the United States, among patients who were gay. And in the media, it was first described as a gay cancer. And no one...
It was known as GRID. Yeah. Gay-related immune deficiency, I believe, is what GRID stood for.
And no one knew why this was happening. No one understood, why this disease was only happening to gay men. And then later it was discovered that one of the main transitions of HIV happens through semen and particularly through anal intercourse. And later it was also discovered that many addicts, people who were using injectable drugs, were also being affected by AIDS. And so this caused medical community to realize, okay, it's not exclusively a gay syndrome, but there's also other people. Then later it was discovered that the other means of transmission is from blood, any kind of blood. And it was discovered that the virus itself stayed alive for a period of 1 minute as long as it was in fluid. And usually that would be either blood or semen. So any time that blood or semen came directly into contact and was transferred from one body or to another, then that person became susceptible to HIV transmission.
What were your observations of what was happening within the gay community during this period of time, particularly in the 80s? What kind of response was there to try to get help and to find out ways in which to prevent as much as possible the condition?
Well, the gay community was the only one responding to it, really. I mean, there were newspaper articles that, you know, put out the whole word about this. And then very soon thereafter, there was a group that was formed that is now internationally known, and that is ACT UP, which is the AIDS Coalition to Unleash Power. And they were the foremost group that came together as a community response that pressured through political protests and activism and all sorts of actions to get the government moving, because there was a great feeling that because of the fact that it was the gay community that was afflicted, that it wasn't something of importance, and that there wasn't going to be the medical response that would be required if it was something that was going to be wider public that was affected by this syndrome.
On a human level and a personal level, what we experienced was watching all of our friends die terribly, and in such a way that they were not receiving any treatment in the early days, and in a manner where the diseases that were affecting them, such as PCP pneumonia and other opportunistic diseases, were literally devastating their bodies. And so we were losing our friends, we were losing our colleagues, we were losing our collaborators, we were basically losing our gay families.
Yes, I certainly know and have had people on this program, some of whom are still currently AIDS victims. And at the same time, one of the biggest problems was the fact that, as you use the word, opportunistic diseases setting in because of the change in the immune system, because of the disease. Very serious problem.
Well, one of the early things that we started to use as a way of both making ourselves powerful and also of making ourselves, of bringing a greater understanding of what AIDS and HIV is to avoid the word victim. And so normally we describe, at least I describe myself as a person with AIDS, because I am diagnosed with AIDS. There are people who are diagnosed as HIV positive. Mm-hmm. But the whole notion of victimhood is something that we very strongly avoid and stay away from, because now, and as always, there were people who were living with AIDS, and you may not be living as well as you could from time to time, but you did have AIDS and you were living. And so that notion of victimization starts to become something that disempowers you, whereas a person with AIDS or a person living with AIDS becomes a person who has a medical condition, but at the same time is a person with a life.
Point well taken. It's actually the title of one program I did, which was Living with AIDS, mm-hmm. on that. How does your artistic work have some interactive kind of supportive reaction or involvement in terms of AIDS? I saw one thing mentioned, the video, AIDS Art Activism. What was that, or is that all about?
That video was part of a whole project that was titled Short Memory, No History, A Case of Cultural Amnesia, which was not only the videotape, which you just mentioned, but also it had a CD-ROM component, as well as an installation of my photographs and political posters and, you know, and new other things that were representative of a time frame from what I would say my own diagnosis to, you know, whenever the present date, when we presented that. And it tried to give an overview of the video itself tried to give an overview of different kinds of art groups that were involved during the AIDS crisis and their response to it. So you had, people from ACT UP talking about Grand Fury, which was kind of the so-called propaganda wing of ACT UP. And then there were Cheap Art and Testing the Limits, which was another outgrowth of ACT UP. It was all video, because one of the most important things in terms of what was a visible result of all of these protests were these videos that were being created. There were cable shows that were developed out of this, and one of the most important pieces was called Voices from the Front, which diagrammed the whole failure of, you know, not only the Reagan years, but George Bush and, you know, other governments, other, you know, political forces that were not dealing very well with the whole crisis.
What we discovered in around the year 2000 was that all of these groups and activities that were working artistically and in the media about AIDS had disappeared. So in 2000, we made this piece, Short Memory, No History, A Case of Cultural Amnesia. And the videotape that you mentioned, we subtitled AIDS Art and Activism, because we wanted to underscore the fact that even though this is not as prevalent in the cultural memory right now, that it did exist. And so that was our artistic response to the AIDS epidemic, or I should be more specific in saying our response to the culture's memorization of the AIDS epidemic at that time.
I thought that's an excellent title. I like that, Cultural Amnesia. I just think
that's
marvelous.
Thank you. I have to say that after we released the video, I did reading and I realized that our good friend and colleague Penny Arcade was also being very vocal about what she felt is a very American tendency to eradicate and erase culture and history immediately. And she was using that phrase, cultural amnesia. And because we work in a community and a collaborative format, and we really believe that nobody owns culture, no one really owns art, I have to say and give Penny credit for probably having come up with that phrase, and then certainly to give her credit for not really feeling taking ownership of it.
What is good about it is it transcends so many aspects of culture.
Mm-hmm, exactly. So many. So that AIDS and queerness and feminism and social and economic deprivation, these are all parts of the same culture.
Now, you use the term queerness.
Yes.
I've heard sometimes that the notion of the use of the word queer is considered offensive, but you're not using it in that context.
No, it's very similar to what happened in the 60s when I was growing up, where when you used the term black, a lot of people of African American descent considered black as being pejorative, of being an insult, because they're like, no, I'm not black. Black is ugly. And you had the whole movement, Stokely Carmichael mm-hmm. and the Black Panthers, who said, no, black is beautiful. So similarly, people in the lesbian and gay community have appropriated the word queer so that it's no longer an insult. It's no longer pejorative. And they said, okay, let's make queer mean different and let's be proud of being different. And so queer is a way of unifying people, and it doesn't mean that you have to be committed to a lesbian or gay sexual desire, but just that your sense of sexuality, which encompasses every aspect of being, is open and different. And this is where the word queer starts to come into play as a new way of relating and identifying.
You're listening to University Forum with my guests, Peter Kramer and Jack Waters. What are some areas that you mentioned about Barcelona? I don't know what that is, but I heard you say something when we were talking off mic about Barcelona. What is that about?
Barcelona was a project that we were invited to do in the city of Barcelona, which is in Spain. And it was at the Centro de Cultura Contemporánea de Barcelona, also known as the CCCB. And this was a multi-tiered exhibition that we were able to put together, and we titled this Los Vamos a Hablar. So let's talk about it. So this was actually for the organization in Spain. This was the first time that they had ever acknowledged World AIDS Day, which is always on December 1st. So within the time frame we were there, which coincided with the 1st of December, we presented performances, we presented videotapes from other collectives, such as Spanish from Homovisiones, which is a New York cable, gay Spanish cable show, and different artists that were also dealing with the whole subject of AIDS, not only in the United States but also in Brazil, and so that was what we did. And it was really kind of an historical moment for the organization. And even within that curation, we had an open dialogue. And to see people come out and to have this moment of being able to kind of take ownership of what, you know, being designated as, you know, being HIV positive, what it means to them and how their lives have changed, and how they deal with it, how it's just having the forum created such a safe space for them. So it kind of goes back to that whole idea of creating spaces where you can come together and formulate some sort of dialogue, and, you know, maybe not solutions, but certainly just the expression of, you know, one's fears and aspirations can be a great help.
That's a beautiful linkage with the notion of the green space and the gardens, and still the concept.
Oh, yeah. Everything that we do, we link. And, in fact, Lo Vamos a Hablar, Let's Talk About It, called a great deal from Short Memory, No History. And in a lot of ways, we function not just as artists, but as archivists. So the work that we make, we also seek out, as Peter said, work that other people make, and we put it all together, we rearrange it, we put it in different contexts. And then for this one, which was done at the CCCB, the Center for Culture in Barcelona, we decided to focus on global AIDS awareness as relevant to the Latino diaspora. And that's why we felt it was really important to do it in Spain. And so a lot of the material that we had done for Short Memory, No History, we translated. Other performance and plays that we did, we translated into Spanish. But then we also went out into the Barcelona community and into various organizations to find out what they were doing and what their concept and their awareness was, so that it wasn't something where we were just bringing our artwork and our social context there, but where it really became an exchange, and that's why we called it Let's Talk About It.
Well, I think it's just marvelous as I look at just even a bit of what you've sent to me, the extent to which you have linked things to between the creative arts and all that you do to the political import of this on what happens in terms of policy. You don't say policy, but it comes out very clearly.
Well, we like to bridge that, in fact, because we feel that this idea of separating art from the rest of life is a very new and also a very Western concept. If you look at other societies, many African cultures, many Native American societies, they don't say, oh, this is art and this is not. They say, this is a beautiful clothing garment, you know, this is a beautiful pipe, this is a beautiful cooking implement. They are artistic, but they don't make it a separate commodity. And so because we are very social and because we're very communicative and because we believe that politics is important to us, we do our art in such a way that we hope that there's a fine line or a gray line and then ideally no line between it. And it just becomes a beautiful aesthetic and social way of being and seeing and doing and feeling.
Now, you've done so much work independently, but also so collaboratively. It seems as though everything just intertwines between the two of you. How did you both meet and become such long partners, both in relationship as well as in your work?
Well, Jack and I met back in, I think it was 1980, when we were both dancing with a downtown dance company. It was, not an immediate attraction and relationship. Then there were some struggles, right off the bat of finding some common ground. But what drew me to Jack was, first of all, he seemed very realized as a creative artist. He had been doing, I had seen concerts of his at the Merce Cunningham studio and seen other people that he was collaborating with, and I had this sense that he understood what it takes to be a creative artist. And then with my experience combined with kind of new forms and the avant-garde explorations that I had been doing here in New York since I arrived in about 78, we just started working together, and with his friend and my friend Brian Taylor and people like Krista Gamper and Joan Carlin, we created this group called POOL, which was an acronym for Performance on One Leg, which was, again, another collaborative project. And we performed mostly outdoors or in nightclubs or in art galleries. And that was pretty much the basis of our relationship was the dance.
What on one leg? Why that?
Performance on One Leg?
Yeah.
The beginning was a kind of a pun, because it was a group that I didn't start it, but I fomented, if you will. And my last name is Waters. And normally in dance companies, you have like the Paul Taylor Dance Company, the Martha Graham. You have a dance company named after the leading artist, choreographer. And we wanted to do something that wasn't that kind of hierarchy. And so we also realized that what we were doing were things that flowed into each other. Our individual works flowed into each other. It was a pool. So we called it POOL, and then we looked at the nature of dance, because we were primarily dancer choreographers at that time, and we realized that a lot of dancing is about performing on one leg, because you're either hopping or doing balances, and we thought it would be a very funny kind of acronym to have POOL represent what we did as a collective.
What's been your greatest satisfaction in the work that you're doing, each of you?
Wow. I think the constant attempt to bring different communities together and to see how they interact. I think the garden is the biggest manifestation of that, to see how people respond to what it is we're creating within the garden, and not only the art but the garden itself, because it is a physical thing, and it represents the loss of nature, which is always diminishing in urban environments.
And for me, also in that vein of growth and regeneration, is the fact that we are able to constantly attract new people, and we also are able to bring people of younger generations into our sphere, and that's very rewarding. That people that may not have a lived history of our experience have some kind of magical collective unconscious about what it is that we are dedicated and devoted to. And really, I have to say, Gene, that one of the most terrific and wonderfully satisfying things are people like you who are able to look at our work and to grasp it, and to just understand that, this is all connected, and we are all connected, and to be able to relate to it and to have this will and this desire to disseminate it out into the world.
Well, what's the goal for the future for Peter and for Jack?
Well, at the moment, we have an exhibition up at a cafe here in New York City called Rapture Cafe, kind of a new bohemian social spot. It's a bookstore, and we have an exhibition that's up until the 21st of June. We have a whole season to do here at the Garden. We do programming at Petit Versailles through October. So we have that, and
we have travel projects because we are very invested in the Lower East Side and New York City, but we also like to expand out into the world. So we will be going to the West Coast to do some college appearances, and then we'll be going to Berlin. And this is something that we continually do. And then, of course, one of our major goals is to have a place and a space that's not restricted to the fair weather season. It's really wonderful to have the Garden as our primary venue, but we also continue to support ABC No Rio, which now has its own building and is going to be struggling to maintain and develop it structurally as well as organizationally, and then continuing to look at the other squats and homesteads and other places to produce art so that we can do things in New York City during the winter months as well.
I noticed that in 2006 you were artist in residence in Venice at the Emily Harvey Foundation. That must have been interesting.
Oh, that was incredible. That was this was not the first time that we have been to Venice, but it's the first time where we've been there, you know, kind of not totally taken care of, but the fact that we had this gorgeous residence that we could stay in, and that we also were able to share that with a young theater artist named Mark Arthur, who's become a great collaborator and is working with us on our new project, Pestilenza. Venice is such a cultural city, and it's also very kind of unique in how it's situated. So it's a crossroads of culture, and for us to be able to, or at least for me, to be able to share that with Mark and for the very first time of his time in Europe was really kind of extraordinary.
So in another way, Venice was a way of us for us to put everything together, because Pestilenza is a work that we're working on. It will be an opera, which means it'll encompass music, dance, narrative, theater, and the visual arts. But also we're looking at Pestilenza as a paradigm of disease, and where disease can be both problematic and also productive in the way that certain bacteria are used to produce things like cheese and other kinds of food products, and even medicine like penicillin comes from bacteria. And also the idea of pestilence, which is pestilence is the Italian translation of that, of course, is a way that things spread throughout the world. And so this obviously has a relationship to our AIDS awareness and our AIDS work, and of making it something productive and positive.
Well, I want to thank both you, Jack and Peter, and I also have to give some credit to your mother, Jack, Mrs. Bertha Waters.
Bertha Waters is amazing.
She has been one of our students here at Temple, and I thank you both for this very interesting program.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you, Gene.
Thank you so much for being my guest on University Forum. I'm Gene Moore, host and executive producer of University Forum. Please send your comments or questions to me by email, jemoore@wrti.org, or by phone, call me at 215-204-4376.